Hello, and welcome to today's Gold Member Call with Parents Tool Shop. It is Wednesday, July the 27th, 2011, and I had a question that was submitted in advance, so we're going to take that first, and then anybody else who may be on the call or who joins us while the call is in progress, we can always do additional questions, Q&A, and problem solving after that. So Trevor is with us today, and he was the one who submitted the question. And Trevor, I will just kind of say in general my understanding of the question, and then I'll give you an opportunity to clarify that so I can make sure I answer the question you're really asking.
Okay.
All right. And Trevor is in South Africa, so I always wait for – there's a little bit of a delay as the signal goes all the way halfway around the world. So don't be disturbed by the little pause.
I'm not worried about the pause from this end.
Okay. All right. So, Trevor, my understanding of your question, because we actually can answer this from a variety of different levels, your basic question was that you wanted to discuss how we can use open-ended questions to help someone else, primarily children, be able to problem solve for themselves and think of ideas or solutions on their own so that we're not stepping in and solving it for them, which would basically be the middle step of the facts listening process. F is focus on feelings, A is ask helpful questions, X is examine possible options. So is that pretty much what you were wanting?
Yes, that is very much what I'm wanting, Jody. I find myself being very much a person who's an internal solver, and once I internalize, solve it, I want to get out there and then conquer the problem.
Yeah.
And so very often I find myself giving this and then I catch myself halfway through this and saying, hold it. There is another way that is more effective, and that is asking the helpful questions. So how do I teach myself and grow myself into that new role rather than relying on my fallback strategy?
Yeah. And it really is how you're wired, and that's your personal preference for how you like to solve problems. And what we have a tendency to do is kind of impose that on others. And, you know, for someone who's a venter or is external, it doesn't usually create as much conflict because then that means that they would be allowing others to vent and would be allowing them to speak up and kind of allow them to process that through. I'm like you in that depending on how emotional the situation is, if it's not a highly emotionally charged situation, I also tend to be an internal conqueror. And for those of you who are just doing the challenge, that's not a piece that's in the challenge, but it is in the book. And I know some of you got the book when you signed up for the challenge. And if you've been reading Chapter 7, that's part of kind of our internal problem-solving process. For those of you who haven't read that, a conqueror is just someone who's very logic-oriented. They don't spend a lot of time on the feelings. They go right to the logic and want to find the answer. And often when they're in the listening position or in the position where the other person has a problem, the temptation there is that they figure it all out for the other person and then offer a suggestion. And their motive is to be helpful. They don't intend to disempower anyone or deprive anyone of an opportunity. I mean, their goal is to help, and they're very good problem solvers. So they're actually using their strengths. The problem is that it isn't their problem to solve, and there's a couple problems with that. Number one, it could shut down communication if somebody still needs to work through feelings or really hasn't had the opportunity to fully share what's going on. And I find I experience this when a conqueror is listening to me in that I'll start to explain what happened, but I don't even get a chance to finish. And that person will start giving me advice. And I get very frustrated and sometimes angry because it's like, well, how can you give me advice when you haven't even heard what the whole story is? So then I'm discounting their advice. And, of course, then my walls are up, I'm defensive, and it's starting to break down communication. With children, the other part of the problem is that whether we're a teacher or an adult or a parent of that child, children need to learn how to solve their own problems. So we're robbing them of that opportunity to have a practice experience at solving a problem not by throwing them in the deep end and saying, figure it out, but by being there to guide them through it so that they're actually learning a skill as they go along. So that's what our goal is. And I really appreciate, Trevor, your self-awareness and recognizing and being committed to developing a different skill that doesn't come naturally to you so that you can really be of service and be helpful and help empower children or others that you're listening to.
Thank you, Jody. That really does help a lot.
So there are quite a few levels that you can do this part of FACTS listening. This is a gold call. I know a lot of folks who are just reading the challenge, maybe the book, they're really just getting the basics of it. And so I really want to address it from that standpoint, because in the advanced support training for parents, we go much more in-depth and really do a lot more skill development. And then, Trevor, you happen to not only be a graduate, but now you're starting to pursue leader certification. And when we use it in coaching, it's the same skill, but there's additional things that I would be teaching you, like how you actually walk a parent through the Universal Blueprint, and that you learn in the advisor coach training. In the group facilitator training, when we are training a group of people, we don't stand there and speak at them. We ask open-ended questions that help draw the information and make connections with the content for them so that it assists them in processing the information and applying it to their families. So those leader aspects I'm not going to go into. It really wouldn't be the best service for people who are at the gold member level. So is that okay?
Absolutely fine. Thank you, Jody.
Okay. So let's just talk about this from the parenting perspective and from a very basic perspective in terms of maybe somebody who's just been introduced to the concept. The first thing that we just want to keep in mind is where this step comes in the Universal Blueprint. It's really rarely harmful for you to use this one step out of order because it can serve a variety of purposes. Asking open-ended questions can help someone work through feelings, understand a problem, can help you clarify maybe what someone is saying. It can lead into problem solving. None of those are bad things. Open-ended questions usually will never put someone on the defensive unless it is a why question, a question that starts with the word why. And Trevor, I think you know the answer to this, so I don't want to talk one directional any more than I have to. Why do I say that we don't want to ask why questions?
Well, I know that when people ask the question why, they feel they have to defend a point of view. They have to defend an action to give reasons why they did, and that's why they would go on the defensive rather than and that you are caring for them and want to help them through the process. So instead of problem solving the defensive, which is, I suppose, the fight or flight scenario, they're going to use the other side of their brain and be able to problem solve that rather than going to protect themselves.
Excellent answer, and even more information than I had expected. Thank you, because I really appreciate the fact that you're tying in using the different parts of your brain, because that really goes to how we're wired in terms of how we tend to problem solve and that we want to help everyone be more balanced. You know, there's a time and place for being a logical problem solver. And when we do that for ourselves, that's fine. We're problem solving for ourselves. But when we are in a position that we're wanting to be helpful for someone else, then we want to be assisting them. And if they're not a logical problem solver or they're a venter or whatever, we want to help them move through the steps. So let me give a quick reminder. And in the challenge lessons, you're introduced to FACTS listening. If you have the book, there's a little graphic, and since we're by phone, it's a little bit difficult. You know, I can't show you something. It isn't a webinar. But if you were to write the number one, and then an arrow to a number two, and then an arrow to a number three, this is a diagram that's in the book, and it's the three steps that people go through when they have a problem. Step one is that they experience feelings. You can write feelings under number one. Once they've worked through their feelings, then they can move to their logic, which is number two. And this is understanding the facts about a problem and understanding the problem itself so that they can move on to three, which is a solution to that problem. So we are going to focus on a skill that you mostly use for step two, which is to help people understand what's happening in the problem. But we actually can use it for all three. So the first way that we would ask an open-ended question, and let's again define open-ended means that it doesn't have a yes or no answer or just a one-word answer. So, and Trevor, just because of the time delay, I normally would ask this of the group and have them do the conversation with me, but it kind of goes quick. So the delay might slow it down. But the way a conversation usually goes is, so, son, where are you going? Out? Who are you going with? Friends? When are you going to be back? Later? Yeah, you get one-word answers. That would not be an open-ended question. An open-ended question invites more sharing. So at the feeling level, step one at feelings, an open-ended question might be a question that would say something that has to do with, so either how did you feel when that happened, or, well, it sounds as though this is what you're feeling. Is that accurate? And it invites them to share more. So the questions have to do with helping them feel validated and that we understand. We don't have to agree with their feelings. They can feel something different about the situation than we would feel if we were in it. We're simply saying, I hear how you are feeling about it. Step two goes into, I want to understand how you are interpreting this situation. What do you believe about it? In addition to the facts, it's also, what do you believe about it and what is your perception? And the situation that I often use comes out of the practice exercises for Chapter 7 and 8, which is the two facts listening, the facts listening and problem-solving tool sets. And it's a situation where a child was the last one to be picked at recess on teams. And his best friend was one of the team captains, and he was picked last. And now he's upset and he's hurt, which is the feelings, and he's assuming that because his best friend didn't pick him until last, that he's not really his best friend. Now, those of Trevor, can you tell me one or two other ways, at least one, that someone could interpret that situation differently if you were that child? What's another way you can interpret that? Besides, he's not my best friend.
Not only am I not your best, but I'm not good enough for your team. Therefore, I'm not worthy a sports person or enough to support you, so I'm not being validated, so you're going to make me feel bad about my abilities and my talents.
Okay. So another possible interpretation is, well, maybe he didn't pick you because you just weren't good in sports. Now, if we were to just say, oh, I don't know, we'll call him Brandon. Oh, Brandon, you know, that doesn't mean he's not your best friend. Yeah, he just didn't pick you because he knows you're not as good as he is. No, that's not going to help his self-esteem, right? We're not going to say that. We all have more tact than that, right?
Absolutely.
So instead, though, which do you think would be easier for Brandon to accept? That maybe his skills aren't the best, or his best friend doesn't, he's lost his best friend. Which is going to be easier for him to accept?
That my skills are not there.
Yeah, because that's something that he can actually do something about. And from an adult perspective, aren't we both, and most people listening to this, aren't we all thinking that's probably the real reason that Brandon didn't pick him? So we may suspect that, but if we actually say, here's how you should think about it, either it's going to come off tacky, in other words, yeah, you really stink at soccer or whatever the game was, or it's going to sound as though we're siding with Brandon, or we're disagreeing and then it affects their self-esteem. Instead, what we want to do is ask a question that gets Brandon to consider the possibility that there might be another way of looking at it. So asking a question such as, well, how do you think Brandon chose who would be on his team? And have him consider that question. You know Brandon better than I do. How do you think Brandon might have chosen? And give him the opportunity to think through that himself. chances are he's going to say, based on who's best. If he doesn't, you can say, well, is Brandon really competitive? So if he's really competitive and he wants to win that game, how do you think he might choose his teammates? So that I'm giving some information to, I don't want to say it's a leading question because we don't want to use these questions to manipulate children to do or think or be what we think they should be, do or think. But if we think that they're missing something or that there's another healthier, maybe more balanced perspective, we simply want to give them the opportunity to be able to consider that possibility and they can decide for themselves. So we also could ask a question such as, well, Johnny, if you were picking the teams, how would you pick them? How would you decide who was on your team? And if he says, well, I would pick my friends first, then you can say, do you think that's how Brandon would pick his teammates? So that he can kind of see, oh, you know, Brandon might do things differently. If I say Brandon might do things differently, it sounds like I'm taking his side and I don't understand. But instead, to validate, you know, first of all, we're going to start by saying, I bet that really hurts your feelings. That's actually at step one. We focus on feelings, acknowledge the feelings. I bet it really hurts your feelings that Brandon didn't pick you, especially since he's your best friend. And then we can move into questions. If the child gets upset again, we may need to spend more time on feelings, but then we can ask these open-ended questions. So the kinds of questions that you're asking at this step two are really to help know that the child has a full grasp on what the problem is, or the other person. Honestly, it doesn't matter if you understand the problem or not, because it's not your problem to solve. And one of the one-liners that I use kind of as a mantra in my head to keep me from conquering and taking over when it's someone else's problem is, I don't need to know the details because I don't need to solve this problem. It's their problem to solve. My role is to support them in going through the process. And that's what these skills are to support the child or the other person. So, make sense so far?
I really love what's just been said, Jody. I think it's a lot for me. The situation of asking questions to help the person who is missing some information so that they get to understand the information that they're missing, rather than asking the questions to manipulate the person or lead the person to your so-called best solution for their problem, which in the case would be then taking the problem onto yourself. And that for me has been a light bulb moment in our conversation tonight.
Great. And that creates a lot of suffering for us because now we are taking an investment in how they solve their problem. And it's really not ours to solve. Also, we're taking it away from them. And I think most parents really want to be as helpful to their children as possible. So I think when parents realize, oh, you know, I'm just trying to be helpful. Well, really, if we were being helpful, we would be teaching skills. So here's the other thing that I want to ask all the parents who hear this later to write down. And that is, that your goal in this process is not to help your child find the best solution in the shortest time possible. If that was your goal, us conquerors could do the job in 2 seconds flat. Our goal is to help our child experience the process of discovering answers and solutions on their own. So our role is to facilitate that so that after we do that several times, children will learn the skill, and then they can start making decisions, responsible decisions, and good and healthy, solving problems in healthy ways, independent of us, and which ultimately is a long-term goal most of us parents have for our kids.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely awesome. Thank you, Jody.
Yeah. So what I'd like to do is, let me just finish out the 3 steps. So then you can use, once you know that the child has a grasp on what the problem is and they're looking at it from a healthy perspective. In other words, they're not looking at it in a way that is interpreting it as, there must be something wrong with me, I'm bad, you know, they've considered other possible ways of looking at it. Then actually you can use open-ended questions to move them to the final step, so that they don't get stuck. People can get stuck in feelings and not move on. They can just stew. They can get stuck with, I don't understand why this is happening. So those open-ended questions, move them through that. And then the last place would be, well, I don't know what to do about it. So here we can use open-ended questions to help children consider possible solutions. And this is really tricky. I find that even if people are able to kind of start the process off well, when they get to the problem solving, especially if they're conquerors, they usually have an idea in their head. And they're very tempted to just say, well, why don't you do this? Or, well, you could do this, which kind of, we're kind of fooling ourselves. Well, we're brainstorming and it's just one idea, but the point is that we came up with the idea. And the very fact that we suggested it to them, it weighs heavier. There's a, when a parent says, maybe you should do this, there's an extra weight on that. The children feel either obligated that they have to do what the parent says, or they, it's like, oh, well, you must know, so I don't have to think about it. I don't have to figure it out. You'll just give me the answer. And that's really not reaching our long-term goal of our children being able to think for themselves. So I'm going to tell everybody right now, when you start doing brainstorming with kids, and even when you are in the second step that we just discussed, you may ask an open question, and your kids are going to say, or the child that you're working with is going to say, I don't know. And the truth is, maybe they don't. Now, it could be some very intentional thing that they did, like they snuck a cookie out of the cookie jar. Why did you do that? You know, that's going to just make them defensive. So, or, and they may say, I don't know. Sometimes kids don't know why they do things. I mean, this isn't the misbehavior tool set, but when we talk about misbehavior, a lot of parents don't understand why their kids are doing what they're doing. So why would we think the kids understand? So there's a lot of times where kids don't understand. But here's the thing. When we ask questions and we get dead silence, we want to allow ourselves to feel comfortable with that silence, because that's the child building the mental muscles of learning how to think for themselves. So what I do, because I tend to be very efficient in solving problems, if I were to have a midlife crisis, I would have it solved in a month. Like, you know, it wouldn't take me months to get over anything because I am just a real conqueror. What we want, so what I do when I'm listening to someone, particularly if they need some thought and processing time, because I process very quickly. If they need processing time, I will literally bite my tongue if I have to, and I will sit down, I make sure I'm sitting, I'm not standing, I'm not trying to be on the run, and I will find something to fiddle with in my hands, whether it's a rubber band or a paper clip or whatever. And I just talk myself through being patient and allowing the child to come up with the answers. If they say anything, you know, I don't know, well, then I just ask a different question that maybe might have a little bit of information that they can consider, you know, some of the examples that I already gave. And if it comes down to problem solving and brainstorming, if I always give them a chance to come up with their ideas first. One of the rules, and I believe this is in the challenge lesson on problem solving, one of the rules of brainstorming is all ideas are okay. And the wackiest ideas usually come out first. The better ideas are usually later. So if kids aren't used to problem solving and coming up with ideas, sometimes they're going to come up with a really whacked out idea. All you say is, well, that's one possibility. What's another possibility? So that you're just getting them to brainstorm. You don't say, okay, what else? Because then it implies that the idea is okay, which it might not be. You don't even want to evaluate. You also don't say, oh, no, you can't do that because now we've shut down the creative process and they're going to be less likely to come up with an idea in the future. So we're going to say, well, what else? What else? What else? In the Lunch and Learn audio series, Children's Buffet or Children's Menu, it's the Facts Listening. I go through and talk a little bit more about how to do this whole Facts Listening process. It's actually a recording of one of my workshops. So I'll refer people to that if they want a little bit more information than just what the challenge has and even the book. So, in terms of doing the problem solving, the best way to really model how these three steps fit together and how we can use questions through all of it is to actually do it as a role play. So I don't know, Trevor, if you might have a situation that you could be the person with the problem. And we could just kind of start from the beginning, and I could show how we can use open-ended questions at every step, and then we can process it afterwards. Is that something you think you might have a situation that you could practice with?
Absolutely. I actually had a situation this past weekend where I went into problem-solving mode, and then I walked away from the situation. There I did it again. So maybe I can paint the problem to you, and we can practice the way I should have done it.
Okay. And now, are you going to be the person Are you going to be the person?
That's right. I'll be the young lady I was talking to.
Okay. And so now you may need to improvise a little bit. So if you may, you know, you're not her clone, so you really don't know how she feels. But just go with whatever you think she might say if you're really not sure, so that you can just kind of stay in her character. So tell me your name as this character.
Okay, my name is Sarah Lee. I am at a college and busy studying administration. I had who was studying with me last year, but she's left to go and get some work, and I don't fit in. I am the only white person in my class, and culturally I'm not mixing. As much as I try to mix with the people, I'm battling. They land up sometimes talking in their vernacular languages, and when we need to do teamwork, I'm battling to understand what they're saying, and I have to keep on reminding to speak English. I'm very unhappy at the college that I'm at the moment.
So it sounds as though, Sarah Lee, that you chose the college because it's got the program that you want, but now that you're in it, it sounds like you're bumping up against a lot of obstacles just for you to be able to kind of be part of the group and understand what it is that they're wanting you to learn.
Yes, I'm a very quiet person, and I don't make friends very easily, so it was a great loss to have my friend leave at the beginning of the year.
So when your friend was there, was that part of your decision in going to that school?
No, it wasn't part. It was because I was able to get a bursary to go. My parents weren't able to afford me to go somewhere else. So it was like an opportunity for me to study. That was the real reason why I went. But it was just so awesome to have a friend with me. And of course, having that one friend made the world of difference for me.
Okay. So it was kind of icing on the cake for you then. So out of these several problems...
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So I've heard you actually list a couple of different problems. I mean, part of it is a cultural barrier. I heard you say there's a language barrier. I heard you say that you feel like you don't fit in. Out of those, which one do you think, if it were to change, would make the biggest difference in your experience right now?
If I could get my friend to come back, so I suppose it would be to be fitting in.
So am I hearing you say that friend, that you depend on your friend to help you fit in?
Well, it wasn't that too much that I depended on them, but just that it didn't bother me if the others didn't care about me. But now that she's not there, it bothers me that the other people don't include me into their circles. I feel rejected.
Okay. So I'm trying to get clear. What is it that you would really like to be able to have most? Would you prefer to find a way to stay connected to your friend who left so that not being included by the group doesn't feel so lonely, or are you saying that you want to be able to find a way to fit in even if she's not there?
Yes, I need to fit in with the group while she's not there because the tasks that we're asked to do and we need to work as a team. So, yeah, I need somebody where I'm studying to feel loved and then so that I can feel part of the team and then I can contribute and what I have to say, they're accepting.
Okay. Can you think of somebody who's in that group that you think does fit in and who does connect? And can you describe for me what it is that they do that you think helps them be a part of the group and connect in a way that you would like to?
Well, this other guy, he every now and then he tries to include me, and I enjoy that. And in his opinions. So, yeah, I suppose it's when people ask my opinions and they include me in some of the problem solving that we need to do in our assignment.
Okay. So I'm hearing that you really like it when people reach out to you. What I'm also hearing is that your feeling of being included, would you say is accurate, is dependent on others, including you, as opposed to looking at what someone does who is included and what they do to help them be included without being dependent on someone else to invite them in. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it's most probably the first part of your idea. I'm looking for other people to include me.
So if you're always looking for others to include you, who is in control of whether or not you're being included?
I suppose they are.
And would you like to have to depend on others to include you, or would you prefer to find a way of being included that wasn't dependent on what someone else did? It depended on what you did.
Yeah, that would be good, but I actually don't know how to do that.
Okay, would you agree that if you don't know how to do something, that that's something you can learn?
Yeah.
Okay. So.
I suppose so.
Okay. So what? That's why I was asking. What do some of the people who are included do? Have you ever noticed or observed what it is they do that seems to help them be included so that you can identify what skill it is that maybe you might want to learn how to do?
No, I can't say I have really noticed.
Okay.
I suppose it's something I'm going to have to be aware of and to look at in the future. So what you're saying to me is you're suggesting that one of the options is I need to study what others are doing and learn from them?
Well, it seems like that would be the place to start, because if you want to be in control of being accepted, it sounds as though you need to be able to identify what skill that would take, skill or skills. So observing would be a way of at least identifying what the skills are. And then it would be a matter of either imitating that or, I mean, once you identify a skill, what are different ways that you can learn a skill?
We could research it, which others who are successful, we could ask the people who are saying what their strategies are.
Okay. So if you were to observe and you were able to identify some of what they're doing, would you feel comfortable doing either one of those things to try to develop that skill for yourself?
Yeah, it's going to take a bit of a challenge because the people that I look to are normally outgoing, and I want to be more like them, but I'm a very shy person, so how would I get past that barrier of my shyness?
Well, what I'm hearing is, the first thing I heard you say is that you want to come out of that shell and not be so shy. Is that what I heard you just say?
Yes.
Okay. So.
That's true.
Okay. So if that's something that you want, The first thing it would be to make the choice that you want to make that change. And what I'm hearing is that you are, is that the choice that you're making? That you want to change?
Yes, it is. Yes, okay. It is a choice I wanted to make, but I've been wanting to make it for a while. I haven't got there.
Yeah. Have you ever known anybody else that says that they used to be shy, but now they're outgoing?
No, I can't say I have.
Do you think maybe there might be a book or something on the internet, someone somewhere that maybe isn't in your immediate circle that might have figured out how to do that? You know there are people somewhere, right?
No, I suppose there should. Yeah, there should have been, and then I suppose that's part of when I said I could research and search the internet or go to a bookstore and try and find some information on how to come out of my shell and stop being so shy.
Okay. So I want you to imagine for me, what would it be like? Describe for me what would you be like, how would you feel, and how might you act if you were outgoing in a way? I want you to paint a picture for me for how you would behave, what that would look like if you were able to be as outgoing as you want to be. Describe that for me so that I can see that picture.
I think it would be where I wouldn't worry about what other people are thinking, whether they're including me or not. Where I freedom to be able to give my input without feeling attacked when people don't accept my ideas and my suggestions, and that I would rather that the idea would be rejected, be okay with that, and carry on and just be relaxed instead of all stressed and worried. And feeling rejected and hurt by them not accepting some of my ideas. I think that for me would be it, just to be at peace with myself and share and not to worry too much about what others are thinking of me.
Okay. And if someone is not worrying about how someone thinks about them, who is in control of that? The other person who's doing something to them, or the person who's on the receiving end and they decide whether or not they're going to let it hurt their feelings? Who's really in control of that?
Then I would be in control. Yeah, I think that's the place I'd like to get to.
Okay. So you may not be able to change what other people are doing, but what I'm hearing is that you think maybe it might be an option for you to change, no matter what somebody does, how you interpret that.
Yes, I think that's where I'd like to work towards.
Okay. So where does that happen? Does that happen inside your mind when something happens? Do you say something to yourself when those things happen that kind of sends you down the road they don't like me or I'm no good? Where does that decision get made?
I get emotional, so I'm a bit confused. Is it with my mind or with my heart? I suppose with my mind, because that's where it starts.
Ah, that's a really good question. So what does your heart tell you in those moments?
Well,
what does your heart tell you?
I believe sometimes that I'm really not. Sorry, I missed that.
That you're what? What your heart tells you what about yourself? Tell me what your heart and what your soul tells you about your worth.
That I'm not good enough and what I have to is not of value and not worth being considered.
Is that what your heart is telling you, or is that what your head is telling you?
I'm not sure.
Do you know how it feels different?
No.
Oh. how might you be able to figure that out? The difference between what your mind is saying and what your heart is guiding you to.
My heart would be truth. My mind could lie.
Okay. And do you know, can you feel the difference between truth and lies? So if you felt...
Yeah, sometimes I get confused.
Okay, and where does confusion happen, in your heart or in your head?
That would be in my head.
Okay. And so if the mind can lie, but the heart tells the truth, when you feel that confusion, which of those might you want to follow?
I'd have to follow my heart then, because my heart's the one that's telling me the truth more times than my mind is.
Okay. So do you think if in those moments you could just slow things down enough to be able, when you get that confused feeling, what do you think would happen if you were able to slow down enough and intentionally focus on your heart? What do you think might happen in those moments if you could do that?
I would start thinking differently, because I would be thinking about what my heart is feeling and not what my head is doing. So I would not be thinking about the confusion. So I'd be less confused, because I'd be thinking on one source or two.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what outcome would that probably lead you to in those situations?
Not to worry too much about what other people think of me, but rather to believe my heart that I am a good person, that I have got value, and I have got something to offer people.
So have you just figured out a way of becoming less sensitive and more outgoing? Is that what I just heard?
Yeah. I must slow down. I mustn't worry what other people are thinking, and I must trust my intuition and my feelings and my heart more than my mind, because my mind lies to me. And I must look at those people who are more outgoing, the people I'd like to be like, and try and pick up some of the skills they're using so that they feel included in part of the groups rather than the feelings that I'm feeling of rejection.
Well, sounds to me like you've got a plan. Is that something that you are committed to going back and doing, and maybe you could let me know how it goes next time you come home or call?
Yes, now that definitely does help. Thank you very much.
Oh, I can't wait to hear how things improve and all the new friends that you're going to be making.
Thank you. That's giving me some hope. Thank you, Jody.
You did it. You solved your own problem.
But you helped me, and I really appreciate that.
You are very welcome. So going back to Trevor and Jody, let's process a little bit what happened in that scenario. You really had to put yourself in her place to be able to do that. Actually, you did very well, because that kind of got a little bit deeper than it sometimes gets. So, but with a college student, and this would apply too to parents of teenagers, they're going to have those deeper feelings and insecurities, and they've got more of these mind tapes that we as adults know that we have. By the time kids are in junior high, high school, they have those insecurities and those mind tapes kind of going through their head. And at the same time, they are now more capable of thinking abstractly and to be able to differentiate where their heart is versus their head, those kinds of things. So on the feeling side, when Sarah Lee was expressing her feelings of being not accepted and lonely, what was my response to the feelings?
try and get me to understand my feelings.
Okay. Rather than tell you they were wrong or make them go away or offer a solution, by you understanding better your own feelings, in the long run, now that we look at what plan she came up with, isn't that going to help her even more be able to be in touch with her heart versus her thoughts?
Absolutely, because now she's empowered herself to solve one problem in her life, and that would actually build a skill that she could use in another scenario, in another area of her life.
Yeah, because when she was starting to share what was going on, I was able to identify 3 or 4 different problems that she was identifying. And what happens when there's a lot of problems is that people get overwhelmed. So to simply state, well, I'm hearing that these are all the different things, which one of those, if it could change, would make the biggest difference? So what was I getting at in that question?
You would prioritize?
Yeah. I was helping her get out of overwhelm and take a look at if she could just make one change in one area, which one would make the biggest difference? Because it's too overwhelming to tackle everything simultaneously.
Yeah.
You can't. You've always got to walk one foot before the next. So that helped kind of focus on that.
Yeah.
And then as we started, there actually were quite a few things in there about that I picked up on in terms of, well, when people do this, I think this way, but I know other people think that way, which said to me that she was pointing out that she had a choice about her thoughts, but I don't know that she was aware that she had a choice about her thoughts. So did I tell her that, or did I ask her a question to help her realize that on her own?
No, you had the questions very nicely.
Because
there was no telling, there was just a continued questions and guiding, yeah.
Yeah, and with you putting yourself in her position, were there feelings of almost like enlightenment, like light bulbs going off of, oh?
Yes, there were definitely light bulb moments there.
Yeah. When someone has a light bulb moment, are they going to be more or less likely to act on that than if I tell them what they should be thinking?
Now, when you have a light bulb moment, it's yours, you've internalized it, you've made it, and therefore you will act on it. Whereas when other people tell you things and it goes south, then you will tend to blame them for the decisions or things going wrong, rather than taking ownership for those decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there, that really kind of emphasizes, you know, this whole thing of them learning not only how to solve their own problems, but when they are able to recognize a concept or a solution or an aha moment on their own, it has such more of a profound effect, and they're going to be self-motivated to follow through with that because it was a self-discovery rather than somebody else telling them what to do. So on the last step of that, So actually coming up with a plan, did I tell her what to do? How did that, she actually ended up with a plan. How did that happen?
You asked a question about what possible solution does she see, or which part, how does she see solving? Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and when she started talking about that she gets confused in heart versus head, that was once we kind of looked at which of those do you want to listen to, and are you willing to slow down enough to pay attention so you can focus and make a choice, that seemed to be a big breakthrough, because then that gave her some kind of a guidance. And if it was a family member and we had, and I mean, we could have made that a faith-based kind of, you know, listen to what God's telling you, or, you know, and I just stay with generic language so every parent can incorporate their own values with that. But for that, for her, that was a real turning point in, well, if I could just do that, then all these other situations where she may be able to pay attention when something happens, giving herself permission to make that choice and feeling empowered that she could make a choice about how she interprets those situations. So it's quite possible that with this plan, no one might act any differently than they always have, but she may end up responding in a different way and interpreting it in a different way so that it doesn't affect her and cause her to go further into her shell.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah. And then at the end, it wasn't, oh, okay, we've solved all your life problems. It was, are you willing to try that out and give me feedback? Let me know how it goes. You know, just getting that commitment, just, well, you're just willing to try it just to see it, you know, how it works without a real big commitment to a plan.
Yeah, I think it's very, very gentle just to ask the person, and see how it goes and give me some feedback, because if they're still struggling and you have guided them and you have them, they're more likely to come back to you and to share with you, and you would then be able to help further down should they need that help.
Mhm. Yeah. And, you know, over time, you know, talking about it multiple times, she might work through one. You know, she mentioned quite a few different things. So, you know, she might, this was kind of a big breakthrough that just really empowered her and helped give her some focus and feeling self-motivated to really take charge of her life and do something herself, if that's what she wanted. You know, I'm not going to tell her she has to change. She should be more outgoing. But she said she wanted that. So that's where we went. If that's what you want, then how might you be able to do that? So so now that she has that experience and has that success and has that confidence, then she'll be able to tackle some of those individual things. Well, what about culture? What about language? You know, that kind of thing. She'll be able to kind of break it down and deal with some of those other ones based on what was working in this one.
Nifty.
Yeah.
It's a good start in the right direction.
Yeah. So we're getting close to the top of our hour. So share with me, Trevor, takeaways from this, not as Sarah Lee, but as Trevor, in terms of takeaways and how this might have been helpful, because you were the one who asked the question, how this might have been helpful for you and for other parents.
Jody, I'm going to repeat myself and just basically say, asking of the questions was to help the person who has missed the information that they are misunderstanding. You're asking questions to support the person. We're not asking questions to manipulate or lead the person or own solutions that you think they should be having. And that for me was my takeaway from this session.
Yeah. And as one conqueror to another, and for all the other conquerors who might listen to this, the other thing is to really focus on, is to pay attention to what you're focusing on. When we are conquering, we are often in our own heads thinking about what we want to happen in that situation. When you are being there for another person and you're really guiding them in a way that's going to be most helpful for them, you're really, your effort and your focus is on understanding what they're saying, how they're feeling, and you're really wanting to be there for them. Not in an undue service, I'm going to fix it for you kind of be there. That's not being there for them. That's still doing it for you. Honestly, that's doing it for ourselves. But of really focusing on them and what it is that they want, what is it that they think. And so there's a very different feeling inside from impatience and wanting to get it done and thinking I'm right is often the feeling that I have when I'm in my conquer mode. When I'm in my listening mode, the helpful listening, it's much more focusing on really, truly, and sincerely caring about what they feel and think and truly believing that they are capable of solving this problem. And I know a lot of parents will say, well, I don't think my kid's capable. And my answer to that is, how do you think they're going to get capable if we keep solving problems for them? The only way they're going to get capable is for us to start doing this and to help our children get that experience and have those aha moments and have the successes so that they can build on that and build those muscles and those skills, those mental muscles and skills.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Trevor, thank you for the question, and thank you for being willing to practice with me. So for next time, if anybody does have any suggestions or questions or topics, get those to me, preferably a couple days before the call. We do schedule the reminders ahead of time, and sometimes we can't call back the email that's already been scheduled to add it in there. So let me know if you or anybody else who listens to this afterwards has any other questions or problems that you want to discuss. Or I also like to do wins and successes. So next week we'll also do that too. So thank you, Trevor, and thanks to anybody else who listens to this afterwards.
Thank you very much, Jody, and all the best to everybody else who's listening.
All right, great. Take care, Trevor, and we'll see everybody next week.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye, Jody.
Okay, bye-bye.